You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Environmental Protection Agency says it plans to loosen rules on methane emissions put in place by the Obama administration. We'll talk to a former EPA official about methane and what the rollback could mean for the climate. Now, we've heard for years that there's a teacher shortage in Wisconsin and around the country. But our next guest says that calling it a shortage doesn't really do it justice. He says it's actually an exodus from the profession. Tim Slecker is dean of the School of Education at Edgewood College. He's the host of Busted Pencils Live on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. on Talk 92.7 FM Madison and host of the podcast Busted Pencils. Tim, good to have you back on the show.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
So teacher exodus.
Right.
Talk about that. Why?
Well, because if it was a shortage, right, an economic shortage. So when we have a shortage, when there's a shortage of nurses, pay goes up. Conditions get better for nurses, and enrollment in nursing programs goes skyrocketing, okay? So if we have a teacher shortage, pay would go up. It's not. Conditions would get better. They're not. And enrollment in teacher education would go up. It's declining. That can't be a shortage then, okay? So people would say, but we don't have enough special education teachers, Tim. Okay, in that sense, maybe that's a shortage. But you have to, when you call it that, though, it doesn't really then give you the right way to address what might be an answer. Because if it's a shortage, you just think there's some type of incentive program that's going to work. When you talk about the fact that nobody wants to do this job, that parents are telling their kids right in front of me in my office that they don't support their child becoming a teacher, this is a real issue that needs to be talked about quite differently, and that's why exodus is much better, because you have to ask, why are they leaving and why aren't they coming?
Right. You're saying in many ways it isn't so much that there aren't enough good incentives, high pay, good working conditions to bring people in. It's there are negative incentives. There's incentives to drive people out of it.
It's horrendous. We have a 35 years. Nation at Risk was written in 1983. Since then, and I don't want to get too trapped on a long history lesson, but since then, we've gone after education one single way, and that is what we say is accountability, test-based accountability. In other words, we're going to prove either that schools are failing, which they said they were in 1983, and if they don't improve by looking at test scores, we're going to then harm them. Now, over the time, we've looked at this, and what do you have? You now have a mass exodus from public schools of teachers. Some would say, well, that's because they can't handle the pressure. I would say that's the intended outcome, because using accountability, so every student succeeds, no child left behind, you name all these ones and things, they're the what's to blame. People will not let go of accountability, though. They won't let it go because we keep saying, yeah, but how will we get after, and this is a real issue, the achievement gap. The fact that kids in poverty, kids, black and brown kids, aren't doing as well on standardized tests according to different measures, right? So we're concerned about equity in education. You will never achieve equity by spending the few resources that you have, money, on tests. Tests don't produce equity. They just show you that you have inequities.
We have a lot of partisan divides in this country. This is one issue that, in your view, brings both parties together. You think Republicans and Democrats are both to blame here?
Absolutely. I have yet to meet, other than incredibly, really progressive Democrats, but there are people. And the reason why Democrats and Republicans love this, either one is they actually believe that, quote, accountability works. The idea that you're going to just say, Rob, I'm going to hold you accountable for making sure every kid in your classroom gets the best teaching ever. Okay, that's not accountability, because when I then test your kids, even if you're the most awesome teacher, using a test continues to show that kids that don't come to school prepared, don't come from poverty, come from sleeping in a car, all those issues. You don't fix that when you're a great teacher, Rob. You do the best you can to help kids understand and have the best experience they can. When I go to measure you on a test, though, those results, the socioeconomics, the zip codes, the harm, the trauma the kids live through, always show up in test scores. That's why if we continue to use this, we're going to continue to see a flooding away of teachers. So principals and superintendents, it's actually now time for some of these leaders to step up and say, we're causing more harm than we are doing good.
Talking to Tim Slekar, Dean of the School of Education at Edgewood College. He says teacher shortage, more like a teacher exodus. He says there are a lot of things, mainly accountability and testing at the top of the list, driving people out of the teaching profession. I want to read from one of our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page, a bit lengthy, but a lot for you to tackle here. David writes, as someone who was a young teacher and left, it was a variety of factors, none of which were the actual students, but rather administrative, systematic problems going on. Barely a teacher's union, poor compensation, too many tests, too much required teaching to the tests, forcing students to take classes they don't like or need, disrespectful community members, long hours, among others. Is that something you're hearing from teachers out there?
I hear it all the time. In fact, I'm doing a survey right now. I'm in the middle of writing a book called The Exodus Files, where I've been surveying. I've got over 650 teachers. What you just read is the most common response from almost 90% of my 600 people surveyed. This is what they're talking about. What you've just said, though, is that everything that person just wrote is the result of this hyper-focused, sensitive, hyper-focused accountability, test-based driven. All of those things come from this idea that somehow you're going to measure your way into equity. You can't measure the issues that are at the achievement gap. The achievement gap is the result of inequities, the result of an unjust education system that doesn't look at students differently. Testing, in fact, assumes all kids are the same. And so why would, you know, people get surprised that we get these results, that we keep continuing? It's because kids are different, and they come from different places. They have different experiences. They have different backgrounds. Teachers can't fix a long-term historic racial inequities that are brought that continue to create socioeconomic havoc on the lives of kids.
All right, magic wand.
All right,
testing is gone. We take the resources from that, put it in your control, and do what with it to address these problems?
The first thing is make sure that every kid coming to school has access to every imaginable children's literature. Best children's literature is available. Nothing is a better predictor of being able to learn to read when you get to school as having books in the house, just having books available. So not one more dime under my leadership goes to Pearson. Okay, they've made well over, I think the last thing was like about
this
9.
This is a testing company.
Testing company. This is just one. But, you know, in fact, they're just about to get now $45 million again from Texas. Okay, they've made billions. Okay, we've literally spent across the entire United States, some economists look at it as probably $1 trillion in tests and data systems. I guarantee you that half of that money could have been spent on reducing issues such as books, food for kids, adequate after-school care, and adequate health care. That's it. That's where all the money would go. Then what's ever left over goes back to the classroom for teachers who are professionals who have the ability to make decisions on how to best use that money to get the resources they need for their classrooms, for the individual kids in their classrooms, because as the teachers of those kids, they know what those kids need. And please, not one more dime on, quote, professional development, sponsored actually usually by one of the testing companies that comes in and tries to tell the teachers, you don't know what you're doing. Do it our way and this will fix everything. It really is. It's an insanity. But if you ask why, though, some people say it sounds, do you understand how much money's at stake there? How much money has been diverted from the classroom? Now, if you just heard what I said, and diverted away to data companies, testing companies, you start to understand that there's a political issue here. Why won't politicians let this go? Now you have to start looking and going, what testing company has contributed to politician X? And this is where I say Democrats and Republicans both take a look at where they're getting their money from. They don't like to give that money up.
There is a no-test movement out there. I think we've talked about them on the show
a few
about
years
ago.
Right. I did it in 2011 when my kid actually started the opt-out movement. I think that's helpful, but typically, again, people with privilege are the ones that end up doing that. And so at this point, I'd like to see leadership. The research is absolutely clear. Accountability doesn't work. And, in fact, it won't work. It will not lift poor kids out of poverty when you test them and continue to not give them food, health care, and books. Okay, it's just not going to work. It continues, though, to prove the teachers are failing. And then it continues the onslaught of this kind of the push on teachers to tell them how inadequate they are. And so at a point where I now have teachers say to me, Tim, I now know that I am being asked to do things. And in fact, I've done things that are not best for kids. I'm leaving. I'm demoralized. I cannot do one more thing that will harm a kid in the name of going after some kind of closing the achievement gap. This is where we've gotten to. And so we need leaders to get to the point. And so an education leader like me, particularly getting out there, but more, and political leaders, you need to stand up right now and say, end accountability. Put the money back in the local school districts. Allow teachers to make decisions about what's best for their kid. Because I guarantee you, missing recess, missing gym, missing social studies, and getting 20 extra minutes of reading prep for the reading test is not what's best for kids.
Tim Slekar is with us, Dean of the School of Education at Edgewood College. He says Wisconsin and the nation aren't just facing a teacher shortage, but a teacher exodus caused in part by federal education policies. We'll go to your calls now. Kate is with us in Kimberly. Kate, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Kate?
I'm a retired public school teacher. I taught for 26 years, and I believe your guess is spot on with everything. I left earlier than I should have if I wanted to get full retirement. It was just too difficult, you know, too much testing, not enough time with the kids, you know, increased pressure of the scheduling, too much staff development. Like you said, teaching to the test, very difficult, made it really difficult.
Kate, thanks a lot for the call. So a problem is at both ends, it sounds like, Tim, you're talking about earlier about kids not wanting to go into teaching, and then at the other end of things, a teacher like Kate leaving the profession early.
Right. In my survey, I have 10, 15, and 20-year teachers that I've separated out, and they make up a large portion of people that are either considering leaving or have already left. So these are people saying, I didn't want to, but I have to. And they talk about it from a mental health perspective, which really, with some of the things they're sharing, you know, the amount of antidepressants, anti-anxiety medicines, the trauma at home, talking about losing their families because of this. I mean, this is what we're, you know, you can't call that a shortage. You have to look at it from what it really is happening. You've got a mass demoralization, an exodus of professionals who are supposed to be caring for your kids. And at the same time, you're creating a storyline that says, don't ever go into teaching. Who would ever design and imagine that you're going to then create the best education system in the world if you can't even keep people in the profession, let alone try to inspire more people to go into it?
Thanks for that call, Kate. We'll go now to Donna in Brookfield. Donna, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that teachers have to be held accountable. I am a teacher, first of all, let me say that. But we can't throw testing completely out the window because testing also guides our teaching. I have to know whether my students are getting it or not, whether my teaching methods are sufficient for my students or not, so I need to test them. Do I need to test them all the time? No. Firstly, I think the state testing is a bunch of baloney, but I do like things like math testing that we do 3 times a year, and I can compare apples to apples with this kid. Well, what progress is he making over, you know, over these three testing sessions? And I think another interesting thing is instead of looking at the negative of why teachers are leaving, that's very important, but also look at some of the older teachers who have lived through Act 10 and lived through some of this stuff and say, why did you choose to stay? What is it that made you stay? That might be a chapter in your book.
Donna, mm-hmm. thanks a lot for the call. A lot there to work with. She likes testing. Well, it doesn't sound like she's talking about accountability.
Yeah, and let's like, first of all, I would have jumped in if this was Crazy Talk Radio and said, no, you don't need to be held accountable. You need to be held responsible. Professionals are responsible. Accountability assumes that there's some form of blame, that when I'm not looking, you're going to then take advantage of an inch and do something. So accountability always comes from a negative stance. Responsibility. You're a responsible professional. Now, when it comes to absolutely needing testing, what she just said, as a professional teacher who wants to decide to use a MAP test, to use a math test that they developed at home during the evening, to design a project based for some type of music, that's assessment. That's not testing. So when people say, Tim, you're against testing, I'm against mandated testing that continues to show all of the irregularities that are present in our society that politicians refuse to take responsibility for. In fact, if you want to throw accountability out, keep it together, we need to hold politicians accountable for the conditions in which our children grow up.
Thanks a lot for that call. Donna, let's go to Jay now in Stevens Point. Jay, hi.
Hi there. Yeah. So I just wanted to comment on the amount of professional development that teachers are required to sit through. Personally, I feel like a lot of it is very redundant, and a lot of it is just, I guess it's the same information spun a little bit different way, and I usually look around the room and I say, hey, there's 30 teachers here all making a wage of whatever, $20 an hour, and we all have a billion things on our plate that we could probably be doing, but instead we have to sit and listen to the information being regurgitated again.
The information that was, of course, your district paid for, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So no, you make the point there too that I, you know, when we talk about professional development, you know, if you asked a group of teachers in a school to put together a professional development sequence to come in there, they would not put together something that was purchased off the shelf with somebody coming in and telling them how inadequate they are and if they just follow the script X. And again, this is why teachers, like we're just hearing from right now, sit in professional development with their, you know, kind of look at each other like going, really? Again? One more person trying to tell us that we need to just listen to them. Crazy stuff, man.
Thanks for the call, Jay. We'll go to Joel now in Madison. Joel, hi.
Hi. So I have a question. You know, we seem to expect teachers to make tremendous sacrifice, but dentists and lawyers make more money. Can we expect our teachers to be excellent if we don't pay them appropriately? And are there other countries where teachers have higher status and better pay?
Yeah, I mean, the quickest point, and everybody gets tired of hearing it, but you just look to Finland. You know, they treat teachers as professionals, and they actually, the waiting list to become a teacher, to get into teacher education. And again, they draw from their, and everybody who wants to rank this, but they draw from their top 10% because of, it's not just pay though. It's the idea of being treated with respect as a professional to make decisions on your own as the professional. Finland has said, we want the best education system. They did this 40 years ago. The first and foremost thing they did was say, teachers need to be professionalized.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller, I think. Philip with us in Milwaukee. Philip, hi.
Hi. I am retired for quite a while, but I had the honor of substituting for Miss Margaret Joseph when she had her second mastectomy. I had her for 3 years at Shorewood High School. She's the only teacher I know of who made the front page of the Milwaukee Journal when she died, because among her past students were Congressman and Secretary of Defense Les Aspin and Supreme Court Justice Rehnquist. Miss Joseph did give standardized tests. It was just one a year, and she gave the test because that was a part of the whole thing. But she knew her students so well because of her excellence in teaching and evaluating. She essentially said, if you do well on this test, it can improve your grade. If you don't do too well, I might take that into consideration.
Philip, I'm going to jump in. We're just about out of time. I guess the case being that this teacher had time to get to know her students and work with them.
And that's incredibly important, the amount of time. Even if you talk about MAPS three times a year, you throw MAPS in with everything else that's mandated, the amount of time lost to real, some people say lost to real instruction. To me, it's time lost building relationships with kids, because teachers are in the business of, yes, teaching and learning, but you can only do that when you can establish a meaningful relationship with your classroom. That only happens with time.
Tim, 30 seconds. Are people listening to what you're selling as an alternative here?
Are they listening? I hope they're listening. And more people talk, as you hear, and they say, you know, they recognize this. The teachers that I've talked to have said, please continue speaking up for us. And this is the sad part, though, is that so many say, I'm afraid to say what you're saying. We need to make sure that teachers who have stories like this have the ability to come forward front and center and make sure that their story is heard, because without that voice, we're going to lose them. And when we lose professional teachers, we are going to lose the child.
Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Tim Slecker, Dean of the School of Education at Edgewood College. He podcasts, Busted Pencils is the name of his podcast, with us today about why teachers are leaving the profession. Coming up, methane emissions and the EPA. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.